This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
This is Steve Downes, the voice of Master Chief, Sierra 117, and you're listening to Podcast Unlocked, the world's number one Xbox podcast. Now, finish this fight. Master Chief, out.
What's happening, friends? Welcome to Podcast Unlocked. It's IGN's weekly Xbox show. This is episode 638. We're posting this one on March 28th. We are recording it on March 27th. I'm Ryan McCaffrey, joining you as usual here alongside my friends and Unlocked colleagues. Stella Chung, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I am well. I want to start the show by saying that I want to let everybody in the Unlocked audience know that Stella's amazing cat Swanson could use a little bit of your help here. Poor Swanson has got some serious health stuff going on. So, Stella, do you have that link handy for donations if anybody's willing and able to to chip in to help Swanson recover here?
Yeah, of course. I will give it to our producer, and then I will also post it on I'll repost it on Twitter and everything. But thank you so much, Ryan, for the donation and for the shout out. I think it was earlier last week as well. Swanson starts his radiology appointments next week. He has a cancer that started in his tonsils. So it's been pretty aggressive with treatment. We could get 6 months, maybe more with him. So we're trying for that. So this is the first time I can talk about it without crying. So very happy.
The reason I very much wanted to bring it up on this podcast is because the Unlocked audience was really kind and generous to me some years back with my first boxer, Maggie, when Alana Pierce kindly started a little crowdfunding effort, and the Unlocked audience just came through in spades, which was just huge for me and for my family. And so I'm very confident that they'll do the same to help out you and Swanson on this one as well. Destin Legarry, I know it's impossible to follow that, so we'll just I put poor Destin in like the worst possible. I should have introduced Destin first. That would have been the better host move. But Stella's in the panel. She's in the box right next to me here. So it's
fine.
Just I was going in order, and now poor Destin has to follow a poor ill cat. Destin, I'm sorry, but hello.
Well, obviously, I wish your cat all the best, Stella, and I hope for a speedy recovery and a big old bam to whatever's going on with him, and knock it out of there. And
I like that. I appreciate that. Yep.
Just bam the cancer right out. That's
love that.
That's the plan. All right, Destin, I know you and I talked last week on the eve of the season finale of season two of the Halo TV show. Did you watch the finale by chance?
No, I have not yet. I have not seen the finale yet, but I liked where it was heading. It was a big improvement over season one. That's where I left off last episode.
And Stella, I haven't seen you on Unlocked in a little bit here.
Yeah.
Are you watching the show? Or are you caught up? Like, what's your status with the Halo TV show right now?
I'm watching it. So I have not finished it yet, but I'm a couple of episodes in, and the action is really good. I very much like it. I think it's returning to, you know, its original form-ish. I like the direction it's going in season two so far. No spoilers, but yeah, I think it's way more enjoyable. I'm actually finding myself, man, I want to watch another episode. You know, like I don't think I felt that with season one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think a lot of I think a lot of people would agree with you on that. And so I don't want to spoil anything for either of you or anybody else in the audience. But for those out there who have finished the season, as I have, I definitely want to just address it real quick. I'll just give my spoiler-free impression of the finale and of sort of the season as a whole. For the whole season, I would very much echo what you just said, Stella. Big improvement. Definitely enjoyed it. I think it's trending in the right direction. It's on the upswing here. The finale did just do what I thought it was going to do. I mean, they were telegraphing it pretty clearly leading up to that, but it does make me optimistic for season three. There's still a couple of really strange to me choices in this show. And I'll just say again, without any spoilers, the character who I probably like the least, not for her character specifically, but just why are you in this show? Like, what is your purpose? And even though they're kind of telegraphing that purpose a little bit in the finale, which I can't ruin for either of the two of you. I don't like anything about this character. And that character is McKee, the human who has grown up Covenant. And she is heavily involved in the end of this first season. I just like, that's the one thing, because it's gotten so much better. I like where it's going. I like where it's sort of suggesting that it's what we're going to see in season three. But with her, I'm just like, could we just pull the ripcord on this character and bail out? But anyway, I'll leave it at that, because I'm sure a lot of folks out there that are listening to this maybe haven't even seen it at all, but might just grab a 1 month subscription to Paramount Plus to just binge it. So you can always leave comments. Please be respectful of spoilers to your fellow commenters. But yeah, we're heading in the right direction on the Halo TV show.
It's better. It's still not great, but I've just kind of come to accept that it's one of those popcorn flicks where you're just like, all right, whatever. It's Halo. I'll watch the action scenes.
Yeah, it's not The Last of Us, right? It's not. We're not sadly in the prestige TV tier with this show, but yeah, it's the overall IGN season two review, we gave it a 6. I don't know if I would quite go 7, but I'd be a 6 or 7 myself on season two. So anyway, onwards to season three, presumably in about a year from now. And I wonder if this show is gonna get all, I believe they had planned 7 seasons, right? So I don't know how the viewership is, if it's a net positive for Paramount Plus, if it costs them a fortune to make. I have no clue, but I'm looking forward to season three. So we'll look towards that in probably about a year or so. The other programming note I wanted to make before we get started is I've got a super cool semi-exclusive on IGN that I just wanted to mention to everybody this week. Judas, the next game from Ken Levine, the creator of BioShock and BioShock Infinite. Before that, my favorite Ken Levine game, System Shock 2. Ken is a very, very decorated developer. I'd go so far as to call him one of the top designers in all of gaming. He's been working on Judas for over 10 years, and they finally announced it with a trailer at the Game Awards 2022. Then there was a gameplay trailer in the last Sony State of Play a couple months ago, but now Ken has talked about it. I got to go out, I played about 5 or 6 hours of it, and Jeff Keighley and I were there together, and we did a sort of tag team, about a 75-minute interview with Ken about the game. We definitely don't get into spoiler territory, because it's a Ken Levine game. You don't want any of the twists and turns spoiled for you, but we kind of talk about Ken's vision for this, which is, to just put it simply, the term he uses is narrative Lego. So, you know, we've seen procedurally generated levels before, geometry, but Ken's idea is, well, what if you could do that with narrative elements? And the interview talks all about that. So check that out on YouTube, on IGN. I also took the seven minutes of B-roll that they gave us to sort of use throughout the interview. I just put that all into 1 7-minute video with a narration over the top. Again, spoiler free, just kind of talking about what the game is a little bit. So that is all on IGN and IGN's YouTube. All right, let's get to the big topic I'm super excited about this, Stella. I know you are too. Destin, you love tech. So I think we're all three very hyped for the idea of this, should it prove real. And that idea is a handheld Xbox, a portable Xbox, an X-boy, if you will, which is what we always referred to that hypothetical thing as in the 2000s, back when the initial rumors of, well, is Microsoft going to do a handheld version of the Xbox, which, of course, piggybacking on Game Boy. Nintendo doesn't even use Game Boy anymore, so X-boy probably doesn't even make sense to half the audience, but that's the origin of it. So Microsoft is heavily rumored to be preparing to release an official Xbox handheld. And while Phil Spencer stopped short of announcing it in a new interview with Polygon, he went as far as to say what he would want from it. Speaking to Polygon, Spencer discussed various existing PC gaming handhelds, listing everything that he would add to the experience of using them to make them, quote, feel like an Xbox. This includes having access to all your games with associated save files, being able to boot into the Xbox app full screen but in a compact mode, and having all the social experiences normally found on Xbox. Quote, like, I want it to feel like the dash of my Xbox when I turn on the television, Spencer said, except I want it on those devices. Spencer danced around the existence of an Xbox handheld throughout the interview, insisting hardware innovation linked with software innovation creates, quote, real inflection points in our industry, pointing to the success of the Nintendo Switch in the process. Spencer then confirmed the Xbox hardware team is considering, quote, different hardware form factors and things that they could go do, end quote. He says, what should we build that will find new players, that will allow people to play at times when they couldn't go play in the past? Stella, I'll start with you. Do you think it's happening? Since, you know, Phil's doing the Phil thing of trying to say as much as he can without actually specifically saying a definitive thing. Do you think they're still just looking at this? Do you think they probably have solid plans that they're moving ahead with? Do you want this?
Well, first, yes, I want this. I mean, I feel like, Phil, if you were listening from the dog park, like Ryan says you do every week, I'm so glad you heard my cries for help that one week that I was talking about really wanting a handheld. I want it so bad. And I think it seems from the way that he's speaking about this, obviously he's being very careful, but he's being so specific about what he wants. And I'm thinking, you know, if the boss, Phil, wants something, he's probably gonna get it, right? So for me, I think he also wants it enough to make it a reality. I think it's going to be a thing. Probably not, maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but I feel like in the next maybe 3-4 years, it may be a thing, in which case I am so ready for, because I love the Steam Deck, and it was actually great for when I was flying to go to one of our friends' weddings, and it was fantastic, right? And I could use the Xbox controller on it, but it made me really want an actual Xbox device to play some of my Xbox games with. Cause, like, I mean, come on, I buy Game Pass and I have so many games on that. I would have access to way more titles that could be optimized for a specific device that is that handles specifically Xbox games, instead of being like, oh, well, this game isn't super Steam Deck verified, but you can try to play it. You know, I want a device that is like solely for Xbox that'll work with my Xbox controller too. So very much want it. I think Phil wants it too. So I think it's gonna happen, just not like right away.
Yeah, he seems to have put a lot of thought into it, right? Which is probably a good sign that if it were a thing where it was just like, yeah, maybe we'd do that. But no, it was, oh yeah, well, it would need to do this, 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 and this. Like, they've had meetings about this, haven't they? I think they probably have. What, by the way, which device, which handheld PC we were just looking at footage of there? That was definitely not a Steam Deck.
That was one of the
early Logitech cloud device,
right? Oh, okay.
Right? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Destin.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on a hypothetical / potential / maybe imminent question mark Xbox handheld device?
I think it's an incredibly smart time to come up with a handheld, with Nintendo probably revealing their next handheld in 2025. It is a perfect time for Xbox to get in the handheld market. We've seen huge success with the Steam Deck. Obviously, the Nintendo Switch is hugely successful. Even the PlayStation Portal, which is a cloud streaming device that you have to be in your house for or connected to really, really good internet, sold really well. If Xbox got in there, and he talks about, or at least what I had heard based on, you know, Jez Corden had his report, there's the Polygon interview and all these conversations about it. This is not a cloud streaming device. This would be hardware similar to the Steam Deck where you're not streaming anything. You're just playing your games on the go. And at a time where I personally think Xbox really needs to take a long, hard look at the Xbox Series S and decide, okay, how are we going to continue to support this device but move to the next generation of hardware? I think a mobile unit is a really smart pivot. And every interview that I've read with Bill, it seems like he's talking about making big big bets on the Xbox brand, like fewer exclusives, getting into the handheld market, like drastically changing what they've been doing over the last several years. And I think it's the right time to do it, at least from the handheld perspective.
I'm with both of you. I'm super optimistic about this. I'm super excited about the idea of this. I would be first in line for it. It fits everything that Phil and the Xbox team have been preaching, have been like drawing up and laying out, where it's just your Xbox games go wherever you go, whatever device you want. Like, it fits exactly with their recent MO. So there's that piece of it. Being able to painlessly play your entire Xbox library, as Phil said, with cross save, access Game Pass, download stuff. I mean, I would definitely play more games and more often if I had this, because I'd either pick up where I'd left off on a game I was already playing, or if I'm just on the go somewhere, I might be like, oh, let me grab some other, you know, more kind of bite-size friendly, like short round kind of game, whether that's a single player thing or a little, you know, whatever it is, puzzle game. There's all kinds of stuff that I would probably try out and make more use of my Game Pass subscription than I'm already doing. And so, yeah, I'm fully on board with both of you. And the thought I had, I mean, Stel, I think you're absolutely right that it might not be something that happens imminently. Like, it's probably not this year. I mean, it could happen. It could. It's possible. But at this point, it's already March. And there haven't been any sort of concrete leaks about it, which tends to happen with all hardware nowadays, even if you're Apple with an iPhone. So it seems like it's probably not a this year thing, but I wonder if it were for next gen, as you kind of touched on, Destin, could it effectively replace the Series S? And by Series S, I mean the next gen equivalent of that, you know, whatever the next step forward, cheaper, lower price of entry, barrier to entry piece of hardware is, where instead of, you know, now we have a Series X as the high end, the flagship, and we have a Series S, maybe next gen there's a, for lack of a better term, Series Y, and then a Series P for portable, where the handheld is the lower cost, lower power spec. So you effectively have an Xbox and a Switch, except, you know, it's an Xbox. Like, the idea of that, where you'd have the best of both worlds, you'd have like this super ripped home console, you know, however many teraflops it is. I mean, I guess to reverse engineer it, it would be like if there were a much higher powered, just home console only version of the Switch that you couldn't take portably, if that existed now. Like, that's kind of what I'm picturing here. And am I taking crazy pills thinking of this? Like, Stella, no. Is that?
I don't think so.
Either
no.
Of you, go ahead.
I mean, when the Series X and S first came out, we actually praised the S for being able to, for being smaller so that we can take it everywhere, but it's still a full-sized console, right?
Yeah.
And I know we've come out, there have been so many different tech pieces that have come out to make it a little bit more portable, like the screen that attaches to it that looks like it's actually made for the, like, it should have shipped
yeah,
with
the flip
Series
up.
S. Yeah, and I think maybe that actually helped spark sort of a conversation about, hey, this console is primarily being used for people who want to take it places, especially with like celebrities who are streaming now. I mean, you can do all of that from your console. So it kind of, yes, this thing that Red mm-hmm. has put on, this thing looks so pretty. And if I didn't have a Steam Deck, I would probably get this, but it's also very big and clunky. So
it's not battery powered. Yeah, it needs a power source.
Yeah, and most outlets on planes do not let you power you know, more, what is it, powerful devices. So like even your laptops, you can't do when it's like a gaming laptop. I found out the hard way when I was on my way to Gamescom. That was a very, very long, like 12 hours. No. But yeah, no, you can totally charge the Steam Deck and portable devices, which is great. So I feel like I like that term Series E. I think that would be really cute. I don't know if they would completely get rid of the Series S if this came out during the mid-gen refresh, but I think in the future they may consider something like that, because you can totally fit something just as powerful in a smaller device. So if you could do that and have it be dockable, you know, have a little dock stand, be able to charge it, get Ethernet cord into it, and also plug it into your HDMI. I mean, the Steam Deck has two different HDMI ports. So you can do, well, one HDMI, one display port. So you can actually have dual monitors. Microsoft can totally do that. So I don't think you're taking crazy pills. I'm totally on your side here.
Destin, how about you?
Well, yeah, I think it would be very, very interesting. And if we go back to the FTC case, there were two important notes from that case. Here's what IGN said. Here's where it gets really interesting. The slide mentions a thin OS for sub-$99 consumer or handheld devices. The suggestion here is Microsoft plans for gamers to be able to use a handheld of some description to play games boosted by the cloud. In another slide, Microsoft mentions cloud hybrid games for its next gen Xbox. And there was another slide later on that was discovered where it says also of interest are the devices above the fold in this slide where they straight up just say handheld. These outline Microsoft's vision for where Xbox can be played and include a cloud device and a handheld. Leaked documents have already revealed Microsoft's enthusiasm for controllers. Sibyl, a new Xbox controller that includes direct cloud connectivity, is apparently in the works. Now, Phil Spencer has clarified that this is largely moot. So they were already looking at handheld options in terms of the cloud space. And the latest reports we're hearing are that this is now more similar to the Steam Deck, where you're playing natively as opposed to on the cloud, but that option would still be there. So very, very compelling stuff. And I'm all for it.
Yeah, I definitely would want, like you said, Destin, a native, like local piece of hardware. The PlayStation Portal thing just wouldn't really be of interest to me personally. That would not be a great use case in
Why not both?
My particular. Well, sure, both is great. Although I don't necessarily want to pay for both if it ups the price of the device. But yeah, I could see there certainly would be a benefit to. But, you know, because you'd need
for
either
cloud
good
streaming,
Wi-Fi.
Though,
oh, go ahead.
For cloud streaming, you wouldn't pay for it. It's part of your ultimate subscription. You just need to open a browser and use it. So, like, that functionality isn't an additional lift for any device Microsoft would make.
Well, but you still need enough internet. And a lot of places don't offer good internet. I mean,
you don't have internet. I feel like this is super overcomplicating it.
No, but but it's not like a viable option for a lot of people, you know, like even as a choice. And it sucks because it's like, yeah, you may be paying for it, but like I don't think I can use it because it sucks. I gave up a fiber internet to go back to Spectrum. So, you know, I can't use it.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, obviously, we all know based on the reports that it's hardware based and that will be there no matter what. And you will by default have the option to utilize the cloud-based service by opening a browser. So that functionality is there if you want it. I'm just saying it's not an additional lift to include that.
I guess what I was getting at is that still, I mean, it's nice as a bonus, but if it's, I don't want that to be what the whole thing is built around, because, you know, unless it's got a 5G radio chip in it where it's connected to the cloud no matter where you are, like my car is that way now, so like it can get anything anywhere. But you know, that would definitely add, then you'd be looking at like a subscription option potentially too, unless Microsoft wants to absorb that cost as part of Game Pass Ultimate, which I doubt. But yeah, I think I'm probably over complicating this, as you said, Destin, that yeah, if you can also stream stuff just through the built-in Wi-Fi, great, happy to have the extra option, and that's probably what it's going to be. But yeah,
You can do xCloud on your PS5. Like, it's it's on everything. That's all. That's all I was saying. I'm also not advocating for a cloud-based piece of hardware, to be clear. I'm just saying that functionality is so easy to include as an option. It would literally just be like a square that you can utilize when you're connected to the internet at no extra lift for Microsoft's part.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess the one notable hurdle slash hiccup in my thought of a Series P replacing the Series S for next gen as the lower cost option is we're not really at a point yet where you can get good gaming hardware in a small form, you know, handheld form factor for a super affordable price. I mean, what the PlayStation Portable, which doesn't have gaming hardware in it, is what, $200, I think?
Yeah.
And the Steam Deck starts at, what is it, four now? Five?
$399.
Four, okay. Yeah, so I guess there's, and if the Series Y is still going to be $500, or maybe with inflation and time, it goes up to $550 or $6, that'll be an interesting pricing model for Microsoft to kind of figure out.
$349 is the lowest one you can get right now for the LCD 64.
Getting down there then. Yeah. All right. Yeah, it's good news. So we shall see. I mean, it seems like a where there's smoke, there's fire kind of situation with Phil addressing this. So I don't want to say so directly because he didn't address it directly, but he has clearly put thought into this. And yeah, I think all three of us would be at the front of the line to get this thing, particularly if, as the reports indicate, it is looking like it would be a native local piece of hardware that you could game on, you know, without any connection to anything required. Next up this week, we have the tiniest of Elder Scrolls 6 updates this week, and it comes on the back of the 30th anniversary celebration of the franchise, of the Elder Scrolls, 30 years since the first game. So again, not much of an update here, but it's a little teeny something. So as IGN wrote in our coverage of this, the Elder Scrolls franchise began life in 1994 with the Elder Scrolls Arena and has seen a number of main games and spin-offs in the 30 years since. The last mainline Elder Scrolls game, Skyrim, first launched in November of 2011, 13 years ago. During a message, 12 and change years ago. We're still only in March. During a message to fans celebrating the Elder Scrolls birthday, Bethesda Game Studios pointed to the 10-year anniversary of the Elder Scrolls Online, mobile castle builder The Elder Scrolls Castles, and finally, the Elder Scrolls 6, saying, quote, last but not least, yes, we are in development on the next chapter, The Elder Scrolls 6. Even now, returning to Tamriel and playing early builds has us filled with the same joy, excitement, and promise of adventure. Thank you again for supporting us all these decades and all you have brought to the games, making them your own. We couldn't be more excited to continue it and celebrate the next 30 years. If you're looking to save some money on your wireless plan, take a look at Visible Wireless. They're a transparent wireless carrier with nothing to hide. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, where you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. One-line wireless, just $25 a month with taxes and fees included. That's unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Switch now at Visible.com. You shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. Like Visible, the wireless company making wireless visible.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
This week's Podcast Unlocked is brought to you by NordVPN. Hey, if you're watching a lot of sports like me and you hate blackouts, NordVPN is a great way to go. You can use NordVPN, a virtual private network, to watch live sporting events, TV shows, films that aren't available in your region by switching your virtual location to a country that is
showing that event. No more blackouts. It's also good for plenty of other stuff, like protecting your private data, your bank details, your passwords, your online identity. You can protect your data while you're traveling and using public Wi-Fi. NordVPN protects you wherever you are in the world. NordVPN threat protection also protects you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. NordVPN is also the fastest VPN in the world. No buffering or lagging while you're streaming, and it will stop your ISP bandwidth throttling. NordVPN is the price of a cup of coffee a month, so that is a super affordable, great way to go. To get the best discount off of your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/unlocked without the E. That's nordvpn.com/unlocked, and that'll give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. And best of all, there's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. nordvpn.com/unlocked without the E.
So Destin, I think the takeaway from there is playable builds, even though Starfield just shipped six months ago, and they're probably still in very early production on Elder Scrolls 6. So what do you make of the fact that the game's already up and running to some level?
Yeah, is that the takeaway? I mean, that's cool, that was for me.
What's the takeaway for you?
Well, I thought they meant like the first game, like going back and playing the game that came out in 1994. But let's assume they're talking about the new one. That's way further along than I would have expected. We did get that teaser where they showed the lands and like the basically nothing, right? They showed Tamriel, a little bit of Tamriel. The fact that they have anything playable is really, really surprising to me. I think Bethesda really needs to look at where Starfield missed, especially now that a game like Dragon's Dogma has come out and it's really been a seamless adventure from point A to point B where you're exploring the lands. There's no loading screens. Like they really need to modernize their design philosophies in some respects. Starfield did really well for them, at least based on what we've seen in terms of critical success and I believe commercial success. It seems like it's been successful for them. But I do think that they need to take a long, hard look at how they deliver the overall gameplay experience, because it's time to modernize. Like you can't just keep building on that 5 loading screens to do every little thing.
So you're talking about not really design. You're talking about kind of engine level tech stuff here.
Yeah, that's what needs to be iterated on, because one of the biggest criticisms for Starfield, it's like you go into your ship, loading screen, you go to a planet, loading screen, and it really takes you out of the action. And now we have a comparable game to Elder Scrolls with Dragon's Dogma 2 that's completely seamless. And that adds so much to your level of immersion and your experience in a game like that. Hopefully Bethesda can look at these successes in this particular type of genre where it's like seamless adventures versus loading screen, loading screen, loading screen, like they had with Skyrim.
Yeah, I mean, I want to talk about the tech and engine side of things first, but before I do, Stella, Elder Scrolls 6, what do you make of this little teaser of sorts here?
Yeah, I mean, the same thing caught my ear when you said, oh, we've been playing early builds. I was like, oh, okay. It means there's enough to be playable. It could be very little, but I think it's very cool to hear that. And it's a lot, I'll say it's further along than I thought it was in terms of that messaging. I am very excited for them. I think it's very cool that, you know, they can have a lot of the devs who are still here, you know, 13 years ago when they released Skyrim, they're able to recapture some of that magic with creating a new world. I do think it's so cool. I have tried several times to get into Elder Scrolls. I think it just wasn't for me. I think I'm more of like a Fallout setting person.
People tend to favor one or the other. I'm an Elder Scrolls person more than a Fallout person.
I tried. I did actually get pretty far into Elder Scrolls, but I think I was just like, man, I'd rather go fight some Mirelurks and stuff. But I thought it was really cool. I'm very excited for people who love Elder Scrolls, because I know there's a lot of people who love Skyrim. I mean, there have been fans who have been so dedicated that they made their own games modded into Skyrim, which is crazy. I know there's one where it's like there's a vampire side story that they made completely from scratch where you start in a cave. It's really cool. I actually started playing that one too. So yeah, I'm really happy for fans. It's just, it's like a huge, huge cut of the fan base in gaming. So very happy. Playing early builds, it's a good sign.
Yeah, I want to circle back to what Destin, what you were saying on the sort of the tech side, because I agree with you. I think there is some modernization that's needed. Now, Starfield was a good looking game, but and you weren't saying that it wasn't. What? It was it the
some
scenery
of the character
was
models
nice.
Look pretty terrible, well, let's be honest.
Yes. That was I was gonna that
yeah. Okay.
Yes, the end of the facial animation is clearly that very old. Now to me, my takeaway from the fact that a playable build of some sort already exists is probably pretty indicative, not that this is any sort of revelation, that they are still using the creation engine, which all their games have run on. And before any commenters start typing, yes, I know that the older Elder Scrolls games were on the Gamebryo engine, but Creation Engine was built on top of Gamebryo. So they're basically one and the same thing. It's been the same tech pipeline, same engine for BGS games for quite a while. And I agree with you, Destin. I mean, I think what Starfield, one of its flaws was that it did kind of show the age of the way that engine works, the way that engine you talked about with the loading in and out of places and how more modern RPGs are not doing that anymore. And I completely agree with you. So go ahead.
Just one last point on that. For Bethesda to continue to grow and continue to be successful, they need to take a look at what really worked with Starfield. The people who love Starfield adore it, and they couldn't stop talking about it. But they also have to be willing to hear the feedback from the majority of people who didn't enjoy the experience, who commented about the loading screens, who commented about the feeling of the different spaces. And you have to take all of that into account to like put your blinders on and just pretend it was a flawless experience. That's not going to help them improve for Elder Scrolls going forward. I'm not saying that they're doing that, but I know the community often, you know, doesn't like to have the conversation about what worked and what didn't with Starfield. But I think it's important for Bethesda to take an earnest look at that and take it to heart, and then figure out how they can implement and improve for future games in their field. And one of the bigger criticisms, I think, is definitely the loading screens and taking you out of the action repeatedly. It's old. It's an old system, right? That
agreed.
I feel like is definitely a key thing that they should look towards improving.
Yeah, and not that I mean I didn't really have any real thought that they were gonna switch engines after Starfield and go, well, you know what, this We saw the limitations of this, and you know what? Let's move to Unreal and build Elder Scrolls 6 and Unreal 5. Like, no, that their entire studio, all of their tools. Again, I'm not a game developer. I don't pretend to understand the nuances of it, but I think it's a reasonable thing to say that everybody at that studio is trained up on Creation Engine and all of its tools, and that's what they've been working with for 20 something years at this point. So, yeah, it's not that. They were, maybe there was no realistic shot they were going to switch engines, but I'm with you, Destin. I do hope that they did take in that feedback. I mean, I'm sure they had a substantial postmortem that they did after Starfield shipped and all the sort of critical feedback came in and all the player feedback came in. And as you said, there's plenty of people that still love and play the heck out of that game. But I think it's also fair to say that Starfield, it did not get anywhere near the more universal critical and player acclaim that their previous games did, that Fallout 4 did, that Skyrim did, there were some flaws. Let's just call them just some flaws that were exposed in the way that Starfield was built, and the engine's a big part of that.
And the very strange decision to go on Steam and tell people about other things that they should have been experiencing in Skyrim. Like, you're basically telling your players that they played your game wrong. That's like, it was a very poor decision.
You said Skyrim.
Starfield. I meant Starfield. Yeah. So like some developer went on Steam and started basically arguing with players who said they didn't enjoy the game, which is apparently a practice, but like that's not a good way to interface. It seems like a negative, like that's not going to be received positively by anybody
And I'm sure that developer's manager.
Yeah, of course.
Politely explained,
I get it, but
that goes to my point that it's probably, regardless of how anybody out there felt about and feels about Starfield, it was probably not it did not have the reception that Bethesda Game Studios is used to.
Yes.
They are used to getting nines and tens and Game of the Year awards and Game of the Year nominations. And that was not the case with Starfield. So yeah, when you're talking to NPCs, that is like one of the serious warts on that engine at this point, where it was fine for years and years, but as you said, Destin, other games have moved on. And so when you get that same, like, pan the camera in a little and you have this kind of I don't want to say poorly animated, because I don't mean that to like blame the animators, but
it's like jerky. It seems robotic.
The animation system, is the limitations of that are exposed, where it looks like the facial animation looks a heck of a lot like it did 15 years ago in Oblivion, or I guess Oblivion's almost 20 years at this point.
Yeah, like the models have improved, but the rigidity of how they converse with you is becoming more apparent as other games have come along and done it better. I mean, I hate to reference Baldur's Gate 3 all the time, but Baldur's Gate 3 came along and it just has like a lot more of a dynamic nature to each conversation. That's compelling.
Yeah, it's so interesting, because I know that a lot of people actually started playing Cyberpunk around the same time because it was Cyberpunk, a little bit after the... Yeah, so a lot of people would compare it, like, especially in the world in Starfield, there's a planet where it's supposed to feel like a Cyberpunk underground,
Neon.
Dirty. Yeah, Neon. And people were very disappointed with the lack of things you can do there, with the lack of actual grittiness that you could feel on that planet as well. So I think it's interesting. And I know a lot of people actually, were in my reply saying, well, this is how Bethesda games have been for a while. And it's like, well, okay, just because something has been a certain way doesn't mean that it's going to be good in the future as well, especially with the modern day of gaming. It's, you got to get up to a certain standard, especially if you want your RPG to be in a fully immersive game, right? Every time I talk to a person and, I trigger their dialogue from behind the counter, and all of a sudden it'll be like Zoom, and I'm like in a Zoom call with them, with like the blurred background. It was very weird.
That's a great way to put it. Oh, man. You enter into a Zoom call with the Starfield NPCs.
Yeah, I don't want to have a remote one-on-one. Let me like talk to you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So that means, it's not necessarily a surprise that they've got some builds up and running, since they now, again, I think it's a reasonable extrapolation to say that they are running on the same tech that they've started to populate out the Elder Scrolls 6. Hopefully that means the world is all designed. They're just having to go in and make an unbelievable amount of content. That said, I am still not optimistic we're going to get this game anytime soon. I mean, the shortest development cycle on any Elder Scrolls game is, Oblivion was, I want to say 4 years. Yeah, I think 4 years from Morrowind to Oblivion, from 3 to 4. And then it was 5 years from Oblivion to Skyrim. Obviously, there's Fallout games in there and there was Starfield in there, but it's one primary team, Todd Howard's team, that rolled off of Starfield and now onto Elder Scrolls 6. So it is, I will be stunned. I would probably have to do something, take some crazy bet if it ships before 2028. I think 2028's the soonest we could possibly expect The Elder Scrolls 6. The last big story I wanted to cover this week, we've still got a little time. Microsoft has reportedly reached an agreement with former Crash Bandicoot developer Toys for Bob for the studio's next game. So back in February, just last month, Toys for Bob announced plans to spin off from Activision to become an indie developer. Toys for Bob is the developer behind Skylanders, Spyro Reignited Trilogy, and Crash Bandicoot, but in more recent years had become a Call of Duty support studio. Now, in a new report from our friend Jez at Windows Central, that partnership is a done deal, with Microsoft agreeing to fund development of the unannounced game. This new game will be, quote, similar to games Toys for Bob has made in the past, Windows Central said. Microsoft and Toys for Bob naturally have yet to comment. Destin, what do you think they might be cooking up?
It's Spyro.
You think so?
Yeah, so they had a press release where they said they referenced keeping your horns on, and it seems like that is likely a Spyro reference as opposed to Crash Bandicoot. So I'm thinking it's Spyro, and I do think it is an IP. But just as an aside, I want to say how great it is that Microsoft had the option to just straight up close this studio. But instead they said, hey, look, you can go independent. And now they're contracting them to make a full-on game. So there's a lot of hope for Toys for Bob. And I am very excited to see what they manage to do with Spyro or whatever it could possibly be.
I mean, it would definitely fill a need in the greater Microsoft portfolio, right? A family-friendly platform. Well, a family-friendly anything.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's
particularly platformer, yeah.
Absolutely. And when Activision was releasing Crash Bandicoot and the Spyro games, like, they sold well. I remember when we covered, when Dornbush was with us and we covered Crash Bandicoot, that coverage did really, really well. So it's great to see that those franchises are going to continue to have life with Spyro getting a big comeback and hopefully Crash Bandicoot down the line.
Yeah, for our audience in their 30s and maybe even 20s, there's a lot of childhood nostalgia there for Spyro, right? And Toys for Bob did excellent work in bringing it back. So, yeah, you're very confident in that prediction, and I certainly see why. And I think there's a very good chance you're right. Stella, are you with Destin on this, or you think they might maybe cook up something new?
The horns thing is very compelling. I was actually looking at the video we were just watching for the Spyro Reignited Trilogy, and that was in 2018. I thought it was a lot. I thought it was closer than that, but it was not. So I feel like it would make sense. I mean, this is it's the remakes of the first three games, and that was in 2018. That's plenty of time for them to have made something, or at least cooked up plans for the next title. I actually missed out on Spyro when I was growing up, so I don't know how big of an audience it is. I know it is a pretty big one, but I'm not aware of it compared to like the Halo fan base, right? So
yeah.
Yeah, but I do know that it has a pretty big following, so I feel like it would make sense, especially for, I mean, kids too who are playing games now. It would be really great for them. It's a family-friendly game, so like you said. So I feel like it makes sense, especially with the horn thing. That's the one thing that I keep getting stuck on.
Yeah, I mean, it's since they've signed a deal with Microsoft, it's possible, it's if not likely, that they are developing a game using one of Microsoft's owned IPs. It's still possible they could be making a new thing that Microsoft just happens to be publishing because the relationship is there. But yeah, I'm inclined to go with Destin on this one, that Spyro seems reasonably likely because, as you noted, Stella, it's been a little while now. 2018 was the Spyro Reignited Trilogy, and as Destin noted, it did sell pretty well. Their history since then, 2020, they did Crash Bandicoot 4, which I think also was a pretty good game, received well. And then some Call of Duty support work since then. Warzone, they've chipped in on. Modern Warfare 2, they chipped in on. Modern Warfare 3, they chipped in on. Don't know what specifically they did. It's not cited. I'm just looking at the Wikipedia page. And then Crash Team Rumble was in here as well. That shipped last year. So they have kept busy. And this is a studio. I didn't realize that they've been around this long. Their first game was 1990. They've been around a long, long time.
I was eight.
I mean, let me look through. I mean, Star Control games is how they started. They did a Disney Extreme Skate Adventure back in the day. They did a Madagascar licensed game. the Skylanders, when the toys for life toys, what the hell was that called again? That whole thing.
What was it? The Skylander thing.
Yeah, the toys that would
Skylanders.
Skylanders.
What was that genre called?
Yeah,
Disney made it. Whatever. I guess it doesn't matter. The toy thing.
you would put the toys on the thing, and they would go into the game.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. Yes, yeah. There was a term for that that I'm blanking on. Anyway, they did
gimmick.
That stuff.
I think it's called a gimmick, right?
Oh my god.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Anyway, long history for the studio, and I agree. I'm glad that there's an amicable situation there, that Microsoft didn't just shut it down and lay everybody off, and then it would have just been this probably the same. Most of the studio would have just formed a new studio under a different name, largely the same people, but they would have had to find funding somewhere. So it seems like an amicable thing on both sides here. And now, Microsoft will fund this next game. And that gives Toys for Bob, as a now independent game developer, some financial security at least for the duration of the development of this game that is maybe Spyro. We shall see. Okay, we have a few minutes left. We have not done a trivia question in so long. In fact, I know how long it's been, a month or maybe even like 5 weeks, because the trivia question that I have teed up and ready for the two of you, it was specifically for Leap Day. It was for February 29th. So, and I have not asked you this question yet. So that's how long it's been since we've done this. So here we go. Tyler from Texas asks, what is the only Xbox game to be released in North America on a leap day, meaning on a February 29th that only occurs once every 4 years? Was it Bucket Knight? Was it Triggerheart Excelica? Was it Steel Battalion Line of Contact? Or was it Nexuiz? NEXUIZ, which I do remember. I remember that name, certainly. I don't really remember too much about the game otherwise, but, and I know I this is probably pretty much a shot in the dark for any of us, but I just thought it was fun because it was themed to Leap Day. So, Destin, I'll go your way first for this one.
What were the choices again?
So you got Bucket Knight. None of these are new.
You say the last one again.
Oh, Nexuiz? Hopefully.
Yeah, that's my pick.
That's your pick? Are you going with that one?
Yeah, next.
All right. Let me make sure I've got
Nexuiz.
I just saw how it was.
I just like the name. I don't know.
Yeah, I'll look up what it was real quick because again, I'm forgetting. I want to say, let's see if it was.
Right. Do you know any of these still? I know Steel Battalion.
Steel Battalion.
Yeah.
I will confess, I'm not familiar with the first two.
I don't know if they're even real games.
Maybe they're red herrings. I don't know. But it's up to Stella now to make her choice.
I mean, these all sound fake.
Do you ride or die with Destin here and risk, either not getting the point together or getting the point together? Or do you differ from Destin?
He chose it because of the name. So I'm like, yep. Oh my god, I don't know any of this. This is definitely a shot in the dark. So okay, equal chances all across. Let's just go with A, Bucket Knight, because it sounds cute.
Okay. All right. Well, the logic was far from sound, Destin, but you did choose the correct one.
Okay.
I did.
You did. It came to Xbox on February 29th, 2012. So 2012, back in the 360 days. And here you go. Nexuiz is a free first-person shooter video game developed and published by Alien Trap. The Xbox version was a remake that came out later. So,
I was confused because it was in 2005.
Yeah,
okay.
It was an arena-based first-person shooter. So there you go. So thank you to Tyler from Texas for sending in that very fun question. And with that, we're going to wrap up here. So, Stella, I'll throw to you first.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. So, let's see. I've been working on a ton of Lightyear Frontier guides for IGN. It has been very cool because that game takes a really long time to grind things out. And it's also on Game Pass. It's very cool. I think it's the most cozy game. I've been playing it while listening to audiobooks. Highly recommend it. And then I'm also going to have things coming out for the new Call of Duty season as well. So keep an eye out for that.
Excellent. Destin, how about you? What are you up to on IGN?
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of Halo Infinite, but I did like 30 previews this last month. So I did the best settings for COD Warzone Mobile. I did the Path of Exile 2 preview of the Ranger class. I started playing Path of Exile 1 of the Ranger. That is a class I was sleeping on. It's really cool. What else did we do, Ryan? Dragon's Dogma 2. And there was one other one in there, but you can check out all of the...
It was a Sony game. It was Rise of the Ronin.
Yeah, lots of great previews. And then going to be playing some Dragon's Dogma 2.
Excellent. I want to thank Red, our awesome producer. And as for me, I mentioned the Judas stuff at the top. You can follow me on Twitter/X, whatever you're calling it these days, DMC_Ryan. But yeah, check out the Judas stuff. I'm pretty happy with how that turned out. So with that, time for us to get out of here. Thanks to all of you for listening, and we shall return in 1 week's time.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.